You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 20 August. I'm Simon Brown coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Chantal Marks from FNB. Yo, we're down 5% in 2 days. It's been a rough 2 days. And is this just another temper tantrum tantrum, or is it the end of the bull run? We're going to be talking with ARB Holdings on their results and Metair on their results. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Some morning headlines from CNBC. More than $90 million in cryptocurrency stolen from a Japanese exchange as it is hacked. They say it's been compromised, but really it's a hack. And when your crypto is stolen, it's hard to get it back. Business day, cash positive South Deep is repaying Goldfield's faith. Production is picking up. Company is finally making profit on that mine for about 2 years, but it's been a long time coming. Morning markets, US was green overnight, S&P up 0.1, NASDAQ up 0.5%, Asia mixed, Sydney up 0.1, and Tokyo off 0.5%. Commodities, mostly green, gold 1786, Rand still taking a pounding 1521, and top 40 opening call looking for a green opening around 100 points up. It's about 0.15%, that as Tencent is trading off around 1%.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Chantal Marks, Head of Research, F&B Wealth and Investment. Chantal, appreciate the early morning time. I got to say, yesterday kind of felt like a day when the JSE should have been closed. It's been a very, very rough 2 days on the market. Is this just, I mean, should we be massively worried? Is this just another Federal Open Monetary Policy Committee minutes spooking the market?
Yeah, I mean the term that always gets thrown about is a taper tantrum, but I am actually feeling like it's taper tension because it definitely feels like we are waiting for something to happen, and I think that when markets are uncertain about what the future holds, they tend to act the way that they have acted over the last 2 days. Of course, we have the Jackson Hole. Mm-hmm. Symposium from the Fed coming up next week, which I think is going to be vital. But what really spooked the market this time around was the FOMC minutes kind of just throwing in there that tapering might take place sooner rather than later. And I believe that they are actually just trying to test the market at this point. I don't think the intention will be to see another taper tantrum to the extent that we saw in 2013. So hopefully we can manage it a little bit better this time around.
I like your point. It's that taper tension. It's the market wants some level of certainty. And truthfully, that's a little hard to find. So I take your point with that, which means the sell-off we've seen locally, certainly the sell-off we've seen in commodities, you're a little sanguine to that and saying this is just the market trying to figure out the Fed speech and don't stress it too much.
Yeah, I think that it's coming to that almost the pointy end of the bull market where you have to start thinking very clearly about where you want to be invested and what you want to be invested in, because you are still able to find pockets of value in the index, mm-hmm. both locally and abroad. And even when you look at a sector that's very exposed to tapering and taper tantrums and everything else that goes along with it, which would be the resources sector, you have to be very selective in what you are holding at the moment and what you are willing to actually buy at the moment, because I think that's going to become more tough as we go along.
We'll leave that there. That's Chantal Marks, Head Research, F&B Wealth and Investment. Our question we're asking you today on our Twitter and LinkedIn polls at MoneyWeb, it's a rough 2 days, almost 5% down on the top 40. The question is, how did you respond to the sell-off? Were you buying? Were you selling like crazy? Perhaps you were ignoring it, saying, nope, this is all just noise and you are a long-term investor.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Billy Nesham. He's CEO of ARB Holdings. Results to year end June. Revenue up 24.2%. Headline earnings up 37.6%. Ahead of 2019 earnings there. Dividend of 42.5 cents. 10 cents of that was a special dividend. That comes in at about an 8% dividend yield. And tangible NAV just over 5 Rand. Stock trading 5 Rand 50. Billy, morning. Appreciate the early morning time. Make the point there in the end. Your profits are back above 2019 levels. Not that the pandemic isn't still challenging. I suppose perhaps a better way of putting it is that you've learned to live with this and to operate within a pandemic environment.
I think we have to. I think all the businesses in South Africa have to adapt. It's something that I think will be around for a while in different various levels. And I just like to point out that it's actually a record year for ARB as a whole, yeah. So it's not just ahead of 2019.
No, sure. Yeah, exactly, and record dividend payout as well. I mean, 2019 would have been a correct record. You still, I mean, supply chains are still a bit of a struggle, and everyone I chat to, and I've got Matt here in a moment, and I says they're also seeing it. Again, it's challenging, but it's the environment that we currently find ourselves in.
I think it's one of the sort of consequences of the whole lockdowns internationally is that I don't think any of us anticipated all these supply chain challenges. And certainly those that are stocked or have stocks or have access to stocks are the ones that are able to trade at the moment. And, you know, recently the Singapore ports actually been closed. Now we believe there's certain ports in China that have been closed. And that impacts both on our lighting division, who imports the majority of their products, and the electrical division in terms of the supply of the raw materials to their manufacturers or local suppliers.
Yeah, and your lighting division, I mean, notwithstanding the challenges, a bit of a boom there, and we've seen it in other sort of allied industries. In essence, the home improvement spend is happening.
Correct. I think there's been a lot big change in discretionary spend. First of all, we haven't been able to go to restaurants and that during a lot during the past year. International travel has been sort of stopped completely. And, yeah, people are stuck at home and they're seeing these odd jobs that they need to do, or they're expanding with home offices and things like that. So certainly there has been a boom in that area.
Copper prices, we've seen fairly significant increase in copper price. That obviously impacts you, cabling and the like. Copper is an important component of that. Are you able to pass that on to your customers?
Within reason. You know, we in 2009, when the copper price last had a major correction, we did take quite a big smack on our bottom line. And as a result of that, we have sort of hedged our exposure by limiting our cable stocks. Because there's roughly a 60-day cycle in terms of getting in and out of the market if there's a major correction. But yes, there would be pain on that basis. So generally, our contracts for cable supply are linked to the copper price adjustment. Mm-hmm. So the prices would almost change monthly, within reason. Okay. Some contracts have to be fixed price.
You also note a lack of activity in infrastructure investment. We did get, just last week, the gazetting of the new licensing around 100 megawatt capacity. That must benefit as that starts to roll out. That should be a potentially fairly chunky benefit for ARB.
It certainly is an opportunity to get a major benefit. We have in sort of March, April, started a solar division in terms of supplying solar panels and inverters and the like. Mm-hmm. In some of the other RPP projects, we have actually supplied certain products to it, but not to a major extent.
And I got to say, I mean, I've been chatting with you, your successors for over a decade. And I've always kind of thought of ARB very much, I mean, aside from the lighting, which I appreciate as home and the like, but I've always thought of it as sort of, you know, infrastructure, sort of building buildings and the like and that side. But actually, you make a point in your notes, which had me stopping. You're actually supplying into a data center construction as well, which in hindsight was me just not actually thinking through the process. But there is, I mean, almost any construction that's happening is going to be having cabling, having electronics, and ARB is going to be a potential supplier into that space.
I think if you look at any infrastructure type project, even roads, there's a certain amount of cabling and lighting that's needed for those. In sewage works, there's cabling that's needed and electronics and that's needed for the plant. So any real infrastructure project has some element of electrification.
Yeah, if we're building something, there's definitely a cable somewhere in that building, that most definitely. Bini Nesham, CEO, ARB Holdings, record numbers for them. Appreciate the early morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Riaz Hafaji, Metair's CEO. They had results for 6 months ending June. It saw revenue up 53%, dividend up 404% to 170 cents. I want to come back to that in a moment. So it was HEPS, no dividend. A couple of folks were questioning me why the company never pays a mid-year dividend. I went and checked. They did in 2010. It was a special dividend after skipping 09. So no dividends, not unusual. Riaz, appreciate the time for you today. That HEPS of 170 cents for the first half. If I go back to 2019, that was 160. This is actually the company's best start to a financial year, and I imagine a year that is still full of challenges re-COVID in the three main territories you operate, Turkey, Romania, and of course, South Africa.
Yeah, Simon, thanks very much for having me on your show. It's a good question because the start of the year was quite important for us. We wanted to show that whatever we put in place at the end of last year, vis-a-vis COVID recovery, mm-hmm. was on track and would work. And so we put a lot of effort into making sure that, you know, export markets in the energy vertical were back on track again, that our OE customers were happy with us in the auto components vertical, that we had concentrated a lot on, you know, managing our supply chains. And that was a really difficult thing to do during this year, you know, this first 6 months of the year when shipping industry worldwide was in such a difficult position. So we really focused on the basics to make sure that we could recover as best as possible. And with that, we saw reasonable automotive volume in South Africa. 265,000 units in production is not bad. Mm-hmm. We expect a little bit more in the second half of the year because there'll be some recovery from and some model changes that come from some of the OE customers. So we expect that to be a little bit bigger. And so with that, overall, ended up being a good result.
And your customers, I mean, there's news out on Toyota to slash worldwide vehicle production by 40% in September. This is that chip shortage, which has been, you know, hitting industries the world over. Based on your numbers, your customers are not in the automotive space, are not having these challenges, I would imagine.
They are having them intermittently. Mm-hmm. We've got no fat in the supply chain. We hand to mouth in a lot of cases from our second tier suppliers, but we're managing that for a few months now like that, and it seems to be getting a little bit better. But there are still breaks that we're seeing coming, and this announcement today by Toyota is a good example, because, you know, it gets to the point where I think those supply chains can't handle that level of volume anymore, and there has to be a break. But for us, I think what we know is the majority of those, that volume may not come into South Africa, that lost volume may not mm-hmm. come into South Africa. We'll know in the next week or two whether that's the case or not. That's certainly what our current thinking is. But for other suppliers in South Africa, we've seen some of the OEMs go out because of semiconductor shortages. Most of our customers have been relatively okay till now.
Growth in the local automotive industry. I mean, you've got a fairly large CapEx plan. We've seen a lot of new models coming, retweakings, and in fact, new capacity coming on stream. We actually export a vast number of vehicles. Is that growth going to come from that sort of the industry actually liking the South African environment as a production space for export markets for themselves?
Yeah, I think that's certainly the plan. The OEMs are focused on the export markets, on making South Africa into a predominantly export auto industry. I mean, that was the original tenet of MIDP before it came APDP in the early 2000s. So I think that will continue. So we've got 60 to 70% of what's manufactured here goes out to export markets, and of that, about 60% is to Europe rather, and EU certainly forms a big part of the plans for many of the car makers in South Africa. So I think that model is going to continue.
When we chatted last 6 months ago, it would have been your year end 2020. We touched a bit on lithium ion. I know it's a space that you're in a bit and looking more at energy storage. I mean, I'm imagining just generally from energy storage, even in the older technologies, is still a fairly large growth area, not just in automotive, but of course there's industrial. There certainly is a vast amount of usage there, and you know, a good growth path over the years and truthfully decades ahead.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. You know, lithium ion, there's so much of activity and so much of discussion around it being such a major part of our advancement in the future overall, you know, from a general industry perspective and even from a domestic point of view for our lives, and what that kind of energy holding capacity could do for a multitude of technologies for us. And so we look at energy storage in a format that is predominantly a starter battery format in vehicles. And so that format, we think, will still have a run into future changes in vehicles, whether they come into plug-in hybrids or mild hybrids or, you know, even pure ICE into the future. So we think that will continue in the way that it is. And that'll eventually change into a lithium ion format of the same type battery, which is what we're preparing ourselves for now. Being able to trade certain types of lithium ion batteries or assemble them with the competence of battery management system makeup or to manufacture cells. There's those three, let's say, value chain items in lithium ion would be something we're looking at. So, and then on top of that is the industrial business, where probably about 15-20% of revenue in some of our energy companies come from, and that will change into lithium business because that value is there already. Even though it's more expensive, the performance is creating good value there.
We'll leave it there. That's Riaz Hafiji, Met Air's CEO, talking results 6 months in June. Appreciate the time today. That's it for today. A poll we asked you yesterday on our LinkedIn and Twitter profiles. What were you doing on Wednesday while the JSE was not able to open? Only got going at 2:30. 40% of you said you didn't notice, and those are definitely the winners there. A quarter went for a walk, and a third were raging at your screens. I kind of fitted into the third thing. Perhaps I need to get a life. LinkedIn, Twitter, at MoneyWeb. You can have your vote. You can have your say on our polls. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Cordora, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.